Hello and welcome to Shades of the Glenn Beck program.
It's our podcast. We're glad you're here. Today, we're going to talk about the pastor that is missing in China. One of the most incredible letters. I mean, Stu, you said it. It was like written in like the Dark Ages or something.
Yeah, it feels like it could come right out of a religious text because of the sort of superhuman dedication to what's right. I mean, I feel like we've completely lost that in our society today.
No. This one will rock your world. There's a couple of things on today's podcast that will rock your world. The real mountain of Moses. We have evidence presented on the program today, new evidence with a video that was just released today that you have to see. If your faith is shaky at all, I understand it. This might really kind of change things. Also, a little bit on Pete Davidson, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
It's Monday, December 17th.
Patriot Mobile is a phone service that will give you all of the great coverage that you want. They're just not going to take the money from you and then invest that in causes that you don't believe in, like Planned Parenthood. Patriot Mobile actually is going to let you invest your money into the causes that you believe in. But most of these cell companies, they give all kinds of money to crazy, crazy causes that you work hard against.
It's true. Why do that? You can go with Patriot Mobile. They were created to solve that problem. They're the only conservative cell phone company in America. Go to patriotmobile.com/blaze. Get started today. When you use the offer code blaze, they're going to waive the activation fee for up to two lines. patriotmobile.com/blaze or 1-800-A-PATRIOT is the place to go.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So last night I was having dinner with the family, and I said, here's what I want for Christmas. I want us all to decide if there is a God. And you know, my kids are teenagers, and you have to search for God. You don't know if there's a God. I said, we've seen things in our life that would testify to us that there is a God, but it's for each of us to decide. And it's not a test. I'm not going to sit down and, you know, with everybody go, all right, what's your answer? I just want us all to really search, because if there is a God, he will demand different things of us and it will change our lives. And it's a question that has to be answered by each of us. Because why are we going to church? Why are we doing things if there is no God? Why? Why would you do these things? You should decide if there is a God. And if there is a God, then what does he expect? Why are we here? If there isn't, you have to do the same thing. Then what is my God? How do I decide what I'm going to do? But the time for a real decision is right now. I get up from the table and I start reading the news of the day to prepare for the broadcast. And I saw a whole bunch of things that were meaningless. Most of what you see in the news is just meaningless. It's just going to keep going on. It's not going to get any better. Donald Trump is impeached. You'll have, you'd have President Pence. Do you think they're not going to want to get rid of him too? You don't think they're going to say he's the worst ever? Of course they are. It's going to continue. We're all complaining about our problems. We're all arguing with each other. Over 100 members of a church called the Early Rain Covenant Church in China were arrested beginning last Sunday, December 9th. Their pastor had written a letter and given it to his friends and attorneys and said, smuggle this out. get this out and publish this, if I'm ever what they call now snatching people off the street in China, if I'm ever disappeared, wait for 24 hours. I'm sorry, 48 hours. If you don't hear from me, publish it. So they did. I want to read this to you because I haven't read something from another human being in this time that is more inspiring, impressive, horrific than this. He has been gone now for over a week. You can guarantee that he is being tortured now in China. He writes, "On the basis of the teaching of the Bible and the mission of the gospel, I respect the authorities God has established in China. For God deposes kings and raises up kings. This is why I submit to the historical and institutional arrangements of God in China. As a pastor of a Christian church, I have my own understanding and views based on the Bible about what a righteous order is and good governments are. At the same time, I'm filled with anger and disgust at the persecution of the church by this communist regime, at the wickedness of their depriving people of the freedoms of religion and of conscience. The changing of social and political institutions, however, is not the mission that I have been called to. It is not the goal for which God has given his people the gospel. For all the hideous realities, unrighteous politics, and arbitrary laws manifest at the cross of Jesus, the only means by which every Chinese person must be saved, they also manifest the fact that true hope and a perfect society will never be found in the transformation of any earthly institution or culture, but only in our sins being freely forgiven and the hope of an eternal life. I accept and respect the fact that this communist regime has been allowed by God to rule temporarily. As the Lord's servant John Calvin said, wicked rulers are the judgment of God on a wicked people, and the goal to urge God's people to repent and turn again toward him. For this reason, I am joyfully willing to submit myself to their enforcement of the law, as though submitting to the discipline and training of the Lord. At the same time, I believe this communist regime's persecution against the church is greatly wicked, an unlawful action. The Christian church, as the pastor, I must denounce this wickedness openly and severely. The calling that I have requires me to use nonviolent methods to disobey those human laws that disobey the Bible and God. And my Savior requires me to joyfully bear all costs for disobeying wicked laws. But this does not mean that my personal disobedience and the disobedience of the church is in any sense fighting for rights or political activism in the form of civil disobedience, because I do not have the intention of changing any institution or any law in China. The mission of the church is to only be a church and not to become part of any secular institution. From a negative perspective, the church must separate itself from the world and keep itself from being institutionalized by the world. From a positive perspective, all acts of the church are attempts to prove to the world the real existence of another world. The Bible teaches us that in all matters relating to the gospel and human consciousness, we must obey God and not men. For this reason, spiritual disobedience and bodily suffering are both ways we testify to another eternal world and to another glorious king. This is why I'm not interested in changing any political or legal institution in China. I'm not even interested in the question of when communist regime's policies persecuting the church will change. Regardless of which regime I live under now or in the future, as long as a secular government continues to persecute the church, violating human conscience that belongs to God alone, I will continue my faithful disobedience. If God decides to use the persecution of this communist regime against the church to help more Chinese people to despair of their futures and lead them through a wilderness of spiritual disillusionment, and through this make them know the Savior, if through this he continues disciplining and building up his church, then I am joyfully willing to submit to God's plans, for his plans are always benevolent and good. I also understand that this happens to be the very reason why the communist regime is filled with a fear at a church that is no longer afraid of it. If I happen to be imprisoned for a long or short period of time, if I can help reduce the authorities' fear of my faith and of my Savior, I am very joyfully willing to help them in this way. But I know that only when I renounce all the wickedness of this persecution against the church and use peaceful means to disobey will I truly be able to help the souls of the authorities and law enforcement. I hope God uses me by means of first losing my personal freedom to tell those who have deprived me of my personal freedom that there is an authority higher than their authority, and that there is a freedom that they cannot restrain, a freedom that fills the church of the crucified and risen Jesus Christ. Regardless of what crime the government charges me with, whatever filth they may fling at me, as long as this charge is related to my faith, my writings, my comments, my teachings, it is merely a lie and a temptation of demons. I categorically deny it. I will serve my sentence, but I will not serve the law. I will be executed, but I will not plead guilty. Those who lock me up will someday be locked up by angels. Those who will interrogate me will finally be questioned and judged by God Himself. When I think of this, the Lord fills me with a natural compassion and grief towards those who are attempting to and actively imprisoning me. Pray that the Lord would use me, that He would grant me patience and wisdom, that I might take the gospel to them. Separate me from my wife and children, ruin my reputation, destroy my life and family. The authorities are capable of doing all of these things. However, no one in the world can force me to renounce my faith. No one can make me change my life, and no one can raise me from the dead. And so, respectable officers, stop committing evil. This is not for my benefit, but for rather yours and your children's. I plead earnestly with you to stay your hands. For why should you be willing to pay the price of eternal damnation in hell for the sake of a lowly sinner such as I? Jesus is the Christ, Son of the eternal living God. He died for sinners and rose to life for us. He is my King and the King of the whole earth, yesterday, today, and forever. I am His servant, and I am imprisoned because of this. I will resist in meekness those who resist God, and I will joyfully violate all those laws that violate God's laws.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So there's some weird Christmas miracle going on. There's weird science, and this has been happening for a while, but this year is truly astounding. More on trivia, which we've played for years. Pat plays now on his program. Pat Gray joins us from Pat Gray Unleashed. And it was right again this weekend. It's 13-2 now?
13-2.
Yeah. 13-2. And this weekend, it predicted the Eagles win.
Over the 11-2 Los Angeles Rams in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Eagles were 13.5-point underdogs, I believe.
Now, Stu, even you didn't think the Eagles were going to beat the Rams.
I never think they're going to win any games, but that was really amazing. I mean, because we did more trivia kind of together on Friday. On Pat Gray Unleashed. And I was, of course, rooting for the Eagles, but as we went off the air, Pat's like, look, I mean, this is going to be the biggest test of more trivia of all time. Like, I mean, the Eagles were not supposed to win that game. Backup quarterback yet again with Nick Foles.
They were 13.5-point underdogs and won.
And won.
So let me ask you, because Stu, you remember, we've played this for 20 years.
Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah, almost.
And,
well, we played it 30 years ago almost.
Yeah.
We were playing it, weren't we? Okay. Mm-hmm. And it has... It's always like this. It's always like this. And there are come times where, like that, when we first started playing it, that we would go, okay, there's no way the Eagles are going to win. And we'd be deep in a season and we'd say, let's
and
just
you want to protect the record.
Right. And so we're like, let's throw a bone. You know, we've only done that a couple of times because every time that happens, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. Every time.
Oh, you can't miss with the perfection. No, you can't mess with the perfection of Moron Trivia.
Seriously.
You can't.
You can't.
Yeah. When you do, you're wrong.
So what are the odds that this randomly happens?
One of our listeners calculated the odds, and you know I'm not smart enough to actually do the math on this, but he did. And it, he said it was a 0.037% chance that this would randomly happen.
I mean, but it happens like this over and over and over again. Most, if we, you know, we should go back and look because don't we have the website. We have a listener that does Moron.
It was shut down for a while. I don't know if it's back up. I think it might be back up. They were going to put it back up this year.
Okay. So, and it should have the record. And it's usually, we had a couple of
bad. The overall record would be pretty impressive.
Yes.
I think this is one of the better years, but you guys have done 15-1 in the past, right?
Yes.
Didn't that happen one year?
Yeah, there's been a couple of years like that, but this is definitely one of the best of all time.
I mean, it's incredible.
And really what was amazing, we did it for, you know, I mean, 15 probably straight years, and we've had some interruptions here and there, but every year, I believe, except for maybe one, was over 500. So they weren't all 15-2 type of years, but a lot of them were, you know, 10-5.
If you would have placed money just on Moron Trivia, you would have made a lot of money.
This year, you would have made a fortune. You'd make a fortune, especially betting against the spread like the Friday, like this weekend's game.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
And you'd never
amazing.
Do it.
No, you never
had. We've had a great record with Moron Trivia for decades, and I've never heard a listener say, yeah, I put money down on it.
Someone I last saw
it,
night.
Did, yeah, somebody said, did this weekend. They won some money on it.
Someone said they won. They put a
based on this.
Yes, they just got to the point where I'm just going to now bet on it, and they think they made this weekend $125. They said. Now again, like if you did the money line bet,
and I wouldn't want anybody to, you know, really put that anything on the line.
No, because there's no. This is crazy.
Oh, I disagree.
I should. There's moron magic happening.
If you have a mortgage payment coming up and you don't think you can make it, figure out how much you have to put down to get that mortgage payment and bet it on Moron Trivia's results. That's where I am at this point. After that game, I'm willing to go down that road.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I may not be a financial advisor, but I mean, money line going into that game had to be 7 or 8 to 1. For the Eagles to win that?
Had to be.
Because, again, 13.5 points is the point spread. Like, they're saying, well, will the Eagles get... They'll probably lose by about 14. They, you know, to win the game, you can bet 100 and win 700 or 800. And, I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing that Moron Trivia nailed it.
So, to win 120, what did you maybe bet? 20 bucks or something?
Probably about 20 bucks and win 125, something like that.
Not a bad return
on your
dollar.
For this listener. And this is what we do for listeners. We're enriching you
with
gambling.
We're just enriching you with gambling advice.
Happy holidays from the Glenn Beck Program.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
So Ryan Morrow is the director of the Clarion Intelligence Network, and he reached out about a project he is doing on the Mountain of Moses, Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia. And Ryan, I have to tell you, I heard this and I thought, that can't be. And then I started doing my homework on what limited information is out there, and it is stunning what is in Saudi Arabia. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be able to talk about this and really see this start to impact the world, because like you said, just so few people know about this, and of those that have heard about it, they rightfully so assume it's crazy.
But there is video evidence of this. There's only been a few people that have seen it, very little evidence, and it's because it is pretty much on lockdown with the Saudi government. I mean, literally, it's like a military installation base.
Right. So basically, the problem that many people have grappled with is that at the traditional site for Mount Sinai in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, there's been very little evidence, and so that's led to an academic consensus that the story is just made up, or at least 99% of it is exaggerated. I remember when I was a young teenager and I flipped through the Bible that I had and had notes on the side. One of the notes said that there was no evidence of the Exodus. I mean, that was in a Bible I had. And it really just turns out, based on our research, that we've all just been looking in the wrong spot. The Bible is very clear that Moses fled to Midian, which would be northwestern Saudi Arabia. The historian Josephus said that Mount Sinai was the highest mountain located near a city that is today called Al-Bad in Saudi Arabia. And when you go to this location and you discard that conventional traditional thinking and you follow the story of the Exodus very literally, because it has directions in it, them going north, south, left, right, and if you follow it very literally, you run into just about everything that story talks about, but the information has not gotten out because Saudi Arabia is a theocracy, it's very isolated. And then in regards to Mount Sinai itself, within Saudi Arabia and some of these other sites that we'll talk about, they are kept secret with fences, and they are patrolled by police. And so those who have tried to go there have been arrested. They've had their evidence confiscated. One guy, a highly controversial individual, Ron Wyatt, who went there in the late 1970s, he was held for 70 days. And then the next two guys who snuck in, Bob Cornuke and Larry Williams, they were then arrested as well and had their stuff confiscated. And then an American couple that were working in the country, Jim and Penny Caldwell, started leaking out photos and videos from the area around Mount Sinai but remained anonymous. But that was a while ago, and so there wasn't any modern-day footage or video, and so people forgot about the theory until now.
Okay.
And so we've released this video that's about 25 minutes long online just this second.
Okay, so Ryan, tell me what you have found and how you got the video. First, how did you get the video?
Well, I did go into Saudi Arabia three times. Really just a miracle happened where I was very interested in this since a young age, and then it just fell into my lap. And amazingly, even with some things going wrong, we did have some encounters with Saudi police. I was able to get in and out of the country safely three times. And we got stunning footage that's really never been seen before. And so now the entire world can see evidence of, for example, the golden calf worship, the altar that Moses constructed at the foot of the mountain, just as the book of Exodus says.
And it is what's stunning about this is it is marked. It is marked with a golden calf, ancient markings, and you know, cows were not in Saudi Arabia, so there was no reason, no tribe later would do that because there weren't cows. And so it's marked with cows. It's marked with a golden calf. It's clearly an altar. And what's stunning about some of these things is that they are behind this very high security fence that is marked around this entire mountain, which the Bedouins and the locals call the Mountain of Moses, correct?
Right. That's what's really amazing, is that you get to northwestern Saudi Arabia, and the first thing that Saudis will tell you, after saying hello, because they're so happy to see an American they've never met face-to-face, and they say, do you know what's here? It's the Mountain of Moses, Jebel Musa. Do you want me to show you? And I'll also show you the other areas where Moses and the Yehud, the Jews, walked. And so when you go there, this is common knowledge over there, which is really amazing. And many Saudis are also aware that we don't know about it. I spoke to a former jihadist contact of mine about this. And I was just telling him what I was doing in Saudi Arabia. And he goes, yeah, Mount Sinai is Saudi Arabia, and it's covered up with the fences and the police. Yeah, we all knew about that when I was in the jihadist world. And from his perspective, the reason for doing that wasn't just because of the geopolitical ramifications, but from his interpretation of strict Sharia law and those he hung out with, which included associates of Osama bin Laden, the reason it's done is to preserve the sites, mm-hmm. Because if people start going and they start, like, taking sand and they sell it, saying it'll do a miracle, it becomes idolatrous. And if it becomes idolatrous, according to Sharia law, you have to deny access and destroy everything. And they don't want to do that. So from his perspective, Sharia law basically saved the sites. And when you go there, I've got to tell you, you feel like you're in the Exodus. It's just incredible.
Okay. When we come back, I want you to describe some of the things that you saw and have captured on video, and then what you are asking for help with. This is when you see the video. I can't tell you. There is no place on earth that I would rather go to. No place on earth than this. If I could go anywhere to actually stand in front of the things that I've seen just on Ryan's video, I would pay any price. This is truly, truly game-changing when it comes to faith. And Ryan Morrow, the director of the Clarion Intelligence Network, is telling us about what is in the desert of Saudi Arabia and what he is needing our help for. So, Ryan, first tell me, take me through your trip. What did you see?
Sure. Well, the first thing that we saw is where the likely Red Sea crossing happened. And when you look at maps of that area, of the underwater area, what you'll see is that there's actually a path going from Egypt into Saudi Arabia. So if the waters parted, you would have to have somewhere that you can walk that wasn't too steep. And that's there, and only right there.
And what's crazy about this is it's kind of elevated a bit. And so the Jews, if you ever study Torah with Jewish people, they interpret the waters parting differently. It is that the water was swept up. So it was the wind that was blowing, the water was swept up and kind of piled up on top of each other. And so it's not like you see in the Ten Commandments with two walls of water. Right. It's just swept up, and that reveals the dry land. Well, that's a lot of water to sweep up unless there is this underwater bridge, and it's there, and it's from one side of the water to the other. If the water was swept up, it is a perfect path to Saudi Arabia. It's crazy.
And the army of the Egyptians would drown if the waters came back, because it's wide enough for a population to walk, but if you're pushed over to the sides, it becomes real deep. And so the waters coming down would kill the people and also would drown them. And so it makes logistical sense at that point. And then after that, we know from the book of Exodus that they go to Marah, but then they also go to a specific spot called Elim. Where they come across 12 wells and 70 palms. You follow the directions in the book of Exodus, you come to this area, it's an oasis that has many more palms than that because they multiply over time, but to this day, 12 wells. And when you go there, there will be Saudis saying, this is Elim. This is where Moses and the Yehud, the Jews, came.
Then you leave there, and you follow the exact directions of the Bible, and what do you find?
What's visually the most amazing point is basically called the split rock, with the miracle where Moses comes up to a rock because the people are ready to revolt against them because they're ready to die of thirst. And God tells them to go up to a rock and strike it with his rod. And then there's an earthquake and a little bit of a rumble, and then water pours forth and it relieves the Israelites. And that rock appears to still be there. When you go to this area, you will see a massive split rock with signs of water erosion coming down from it onto the ground where a lake formed.
Okay, so you understand this is crazy. It's not a mountain. It's just this giant rock on this like pile of rocks, and this huge rock, and it's split from top to bottom. It's in the desert. But as Ryan just said, right at where the rock is split, there's water erosion. So there is, it's clear that the rocks on the ground that are in front of this rock, a mighty water ran from that point down into the valley for a very long time. Because you can see, how long does it take to water erode rocks. It's actually smooth where the water flowed. It's crazy.
Yeah, and nearby there are inscriptions that appear to be Proto-Hebrew, including images of a foot and a sandal with Proto-Hebrew writing that means the sole of your foot. Now, the reason that makes sense is because of the biblical verse where God told the Israelites, wherever your foot, the sole of your foot touches, that's going to be your land. And so there are these Proto-Hebrew inscriptions of basically the Israelite tribal sign right in this area. And the local Saudis, at least those that will talk to you rather than kick you out of the Split Rock area, they refer to this area either as the water of Moses or the Split Rock of Moses.
Okay, so then you move on, and what do you come to?
That's where you get to what the locals call the Mountain of Moses, Jebel Musa. And the top of it, in a real visually reminiscent feature of God descending upon it like a fire, the top of it is black. Now, there's some people that say that that's just a natural thing. It's not evidence of supernatural phenomena. But I've got to tell you, visually, it's very distinct. And just on that level alone, you look at it, and it's just breathtaking.
Okay, so now I saw some video, and I didn't notice that black anywhere else on any other mountaintop or mountainside or anything else. Did you?
I did, yes.
You could see that black elsewhere.
Could. Yep.
Okay.
Just in that immediate area, I could. But, I mean, who knows how big, if that phenomenon happens and there is to be evidence at the top of the mountain of that, who knows how big that was? I mean, maybe it would have been more than just that peak. We don't really know.
Okay.
So it's hard to tell. But then in front of this mountain, just like, and you can just imagine Moses coming down from the mountain and seeing the people worshiping the golden calf based on where it is visually, that's where you have a site of golden calf worship, or at least bull worship. And the local custom is that that's where that story took place. And you can see these petroglyphs of people worshiping cows on this stand where the golden calf would have been at the top. And there's a circular area on the top that maybe, you know, speculatively, could have been where the golden calf was smashed into powder, because you can see it was worn down at the top. And then there's an altar in front of it. Again, just like the Bible says.
Okay, give the audience a scope of how large this is, because it's enormous.
Yeah, I don't have the measurements in front of me, but you climb it, basically. You can climb it, and you get to the top of it, and if the golden calf was on the top, then the local population of Israelites that turned against Moses would have seen it. And so it makes sense. But also, that was a brief episode in the book of Exodus. So if it was too large and there were too many petroglyphs, it actually wouldn't match the story. So what you see is a limited amount of intense human activity that apparently just was limited to that one spot and then suddenly stopped. From there, if you walk towards the foot of the mountain, you see an altar of uncut stone. You can see where the animals would have been brought up through animal chutes, and about 12 marble pillars. Now, why is that important? According to this book of Exodus, Moses builds an altar of uncut stone with no steps at the foot of Mount Sinai and erects 12 pillars to represent the tribes of Israel. And that's right there at the foot of the mountain.
It is astonishing. And it has been preserved by the Saudis and protected by the Saudis. When you see the lengths, they have surrounded this entire gigantic mountain with security fence. It is literally like a military operation. And you can't go anywhere. And it says, because of archaeological reasons, but it's in English and Arabic, and you're not allowed. You know, there's a popular way to dismiss the Bible is to say there's no evidence. Well, there's all kinds of evidence. But on one of the biggest stories of the Bible, Moses and the Exodus and Mount Sinai, there is no evidence. However, we have found now that there is evidence, and it is being protected by the Saudis. And you're not allowed to see it. You're not allowed to go there. It's protected by a fence. The locals call it Mount Sinai, the Mountain of Moses. It has all of the markings from the Red Sea, if you just follow the directions in the Bible, to the mountain. And you see all of the things that are said to be seen in the Bible. And it's not, well, I guess that could be. No, no, no. It's clearly that. So this is either an elaborate, ancient, I don't know, hoax or Disneyland for, you know, travelers to come and say, hey, look, and this is the Mountain of Moses right here, right here. And Walt Disney is, you know, making audio animatronic calves.
It's good for a tourism board, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. There's something to this. Ryan Morrow is the director of the Clarion Intelligence Network. I want to give you the video that you can go and see this. It's Sinai in Arabia, S-I-N-A-I in Arabia, sinaiinarabia.com. Go there now and just look at the footage. It is stunning that you've never heard of this.
Ryan, it's interesting looking at this because I think what you've put together is a really interesting theory with a lot of evidence. And you kind of point this out a couple times in the piece where you're saying, like, we don't know for sure about all this stuff. But it all fits. What is the level of acceptance when it comes to the church and religious experts and historians? Like, do they believe this is plausible? Do they believe this is reality? Or is this something you kind of just came up with on your own and you kind of want to see how they react?
No, I mean, I'm not even the first person to go to right. the mountain, and so the theory's been out for a few decades. But I think it is gaining more mainstream acceptance. There are some scholars who have said it's possible or likely. They obviously wouldn't want to commit 100%. You do come across the problem of conventional thinking and people with credentials being taught a certain way, and so they just stick to the traditional site. But then those same people will almost always admit that there's no evidence at the traditional site. So I think the problem is that people just don't know everything that's there. And of those that I talk to, once they understand what's there, they say, yeah, I mean, that's kind of got to be it. One thing I'd add is that this actually is separate from Clarion Project, where I work, just so that I keep my bosses happy. So this was an independent project. But speaking to the earlier point about people not knowing about this, that's why I think this radio segment right now could be a historical moment, because the ramifications of this are just massive on a personal level and even geopolitically. And so I encourage people to go to sinaiinarabia.com, and hopefully the Blaze social media accounts can also send out the direct link to the YouTube video that you can search called Finding the Mountain of Moses that just went live. And I hope people watch it on Christmas with their families and with their churches, because I think for a lot of people, especially including myself, it really brought me to a whole new level of confidence in my faith, but also understanding of my faith, and that you can't put a price on.
And you weren't somebody who, you say in the video that, you know, you're not a man of perfect faith, and you struggle with it from time to time. True?
Absolutely. I still have atheist days because I'm just that cynical by nature.
So what was it like for someone like you to stand there? I mean, I honestly, Ryan, I've done all kinds of amazing things. I'd give my right arm to be able to go stand there.
I still am stunned. Like, it's still not real to me that it happened, because I think of when I was like 14 years old reading about this and becoming just so interested in it, but never thinking, oh, I'd ever actually go there. It was a dream, not a goal, because a goal is something achievable. This wasn't achievable. And then just out of nowhere, I get this opportunity, and I go three times. I even brought my mother, actually. And when I stood there, I just felt really unworthy and also confused as to why I'd be granted this opportunity. And so it's a weird feeling. And even beyond just seeing the evidence up close, the crazy amount of coincidences that were required to happen to get me there and to get me back safely, even when things went wrong, that's more stunning to me than even the evidence I saw right in front of my face.
Ryan, I will tell you that when I first got this proposal in front of me, I thought, okay, let me see it. When I saw it and then I started doing my own homework on it, I feel compelled to make sure everyone in this audience sees this. I do believe this is game changing. I think this is one of those moments in history that, you know, here we are, people who are struggling with our faith. And this is kind of like the a massive gift of, okay, well, explain this. You say there's no evidence. You say there's this. You say there's that. Okay, fine. Explain this. I've kept it from the world for this long and preserved it. So tell me about this. And it's a 4,000 year old hoax. If it's a hoax, it's remarkable. And I think what adds so much credibility is the fences around it. You know, the Saudis saying in Arabic and English, this is an important archaeological site. No trespassing. And they mean it. They're backing that up. And anybody who has goes to jail for a long time. And no pictures are allowed out.
Right, which is also why I view it as a bit of a miracle that I did not end up in jail. I saw the police. I encountered them on a few occasions. But there are just tremendous opportunities happening that haven't even been publicized yet. There are things that we have not released that we are working on. Things that have been found that just need more research and we weren't ready to come forward with. And so that's why we are asking people to, if they feel compelled to do so, to donate at SinaiInArabia.com so that we can do further research. But more importantly, the Saudis are constructing a super city. And in the middle of that super city is all of this stuff, including Mount Sinai. And if that construction goes forth, we run the risk of evidence being destroyed, damaged, or you can't excavate because no one's even brought a shovel to this place and started digging yet. And if you have buildings there, you obviously can't do that. So we want to engage the Saudis to get them to modify their plans and also partner with them and make them understand that it is in their economic interests to open this up, preserve it all, preserve the plain where the Israelites camped, not just the mountain. And so preserve it, allow outside access, and don't do anything that could ruin it or destroy evidence. And that construction I saw going on when I was there. It's happening quickly.
Okay. So if you want to be a part and you want to help fund this project, go to SinaiInArabia.com. You will also find the video link there. You can also look for the link on YouTube, and that is In Search of the Mountain of Moses. Is that right?
It's Finding the Mountain of Moses, the real Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia. I'll be tweeting it out as well.
Okay, and we'll tweet that out, and we'll make sure that it's at the Blaze and everything else. Ryan, thank you for sharing this. Thank you for beginning a profound journey, at least in my life, and I think a profound journey in many people's lives. Thank you so much, and glad you made it back.
Thank you so much for having me. Those words mean the world to me. So thank you so much, and we'll keep you posted.
You got it. It's Ryan Morrow again, SinaiInArabia.com.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.